corrupt politicians, cause they own my special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain, but my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
And good morning. It is 9 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 10 on KBOO, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11, we've got the food show, welcoming the organizers of Oyster Day, plus the author of Mastering Stocks and Broths. But to start off this morning, it's Political Perspectives, presenting Sojourner Truth Radio with an International Women's Month special. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO. Don't forget that to keep informed and get involved, you can go to kboo.fm anytime and click on Donate to become a member. And we sure thank you for becoming a member of KBOO. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, an International Women's Month special. We bring you the first of our reports on events that took place on International Women's Day, March 8, 2018, and today from two branches of the women's movement. We hear some of the sound from the United Nations International Women's Day event that featured actress Reese Witherspoon and Danai Gurira from Zimbabwe. She burst onto the stage with her performance in the blockbuster film Black Panther. And we hear from three guests who were involved in the International Women's Strike that took place on March 8th in 51 countries around the world. They will report on events that happened in Spain, where the largest International Women's Strike event took place. Also, we'll hear from what happened in Peru and in the UK. We will be joined by Nina Lopez, originally from Argentina, and Sarah Calloway. They are both based in London, England, and are part of the Global Women's Strike. And from the U.S., from the International Women's Strike Coordinating Committee and the New York City International Women's Strike, Ximena Bustamante. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. Two members of the Senate Judiciary Committee say Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg should be called to testify about how the personal data of more than 50 million Facebook users was exposed. Louisiana Republican John Kennedy and Minnesota Democrat Amy Klobuchar made the request. Klobuchar spoke on CNN.
I think he should explain to the American people how this happened, how many people were hurt, and most importantly, how they're going to fix it. Because you just can't have 50 million Americans have their private data exposed without their permission. A couple hundred thousand of them may have answered a quiz by a Russian-American professor that somehow Facebook decided could have access to the data. And this is what's happened.
Facebook is under fire after reports that former Trump campaign consultant Cambridge Analytica used the inappropriately obtained data to try to influence the election. A Cambridge co-founder who left in 2014 said the firm harvested personal data to learn about individuals and create an information cocoon to change their perceptions. He said the firm took fake news to the next level. Federal investigators say a package that exploded at a FedEx facility near San Antonio, Texas, early this morning is believed to be linked to a string of four bombings in Austin this month. FedEx says one person suffered minor injuries. The four Austin bombings have killed two people and injured four others since March 2nd. School officials reported there was a shooting at a Maryland high school, that the event is contained and the campus on lockdown. The St. Mary's County Public School said on its website there was a shooting at Great Mills High School, located in the southern end of the state. No immediate word on any injuries or the identity of the shooter. Donald Trump called for the death penalty for some drug traffickers as he unveiled a get-tough approach to the country's opioid epidemic. Scott Barber reports.
President Donald Trump vowed to liberate America from the ongoing opioid epidemic. The plan would involve more serious punishments for drug traffickers, up to and including the death penalty.
These are terrible people, and we have to get tough on those people, because we can have all the blue ribbon committees we want, but if we don't get tough on the drug dealers, we're wasting our time. Just remember that. We're wasting our time. And that toughness includes the death penalty.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 42,000 people died from opioid overdoses in 2016. Maria McFarland Sanchez Marino is the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. She said that harsh punishments for drug trafficking had a history of making the problems worse.
Criminalization of drugs in the United States has tended to drive drug use underground, making it more likely that people will engage in risky behaviors and less likely that they will access help.
I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
The northern pocket of a divided rebel enclave in Syria's eastern Ghouta has come under renewed fire by Syrian government forces. Medics say dozens were killed in an attack on a school in Douma where people were sheltering. The dead reportedly included a dozen children. Tens of thousands of civilians are trapped in Douma. The United Nations Refugee Agency says hundreds of thousands are still trapped by fierce fighting and in dire need of aid in all of eastern Ghouta. Humanitarian officials called the situation chaotic.
It's pretty chaotic, frankly, as you have seen. There's ongoing bombardment. It's a war zone, and people are fleeing in the tens of thousands out of East Ghouta.
A UN refugee spokesman called for full and unhindered humanitarian access to civilians in the region, both inside and outside eastern Ghouta. Saudi Arabia's young crown prince meets with Donald Trump as he opens a marathon tour of the country. Trump and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman are sure to discuss the Iran nuclear deal, which Saudi Arabia staunchly opposed. He'll hold separate meetings with a long roster of influential U.S. officials, including the Secretaries of Defense, Treasury, and Commerce, the CIA chief, and congressional leaders from both parties. Over 3 weeks in the U.S., the prince will meet business leaders in New York, tech officials from Google and Apple in San Francisco, and entertainment industry leaders in Los Angeles. Other stops include Boston and Houston. Crown Prince Salman has been closely identified with the three-year-old war, which has devastated Yemen, which was already the Arab world's poorest country. He started the war while defense minister. I'm Eileen Alfandera. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines, and today, an International Women's Month special, we're bringing you the first of our reports on events that took place on International Women's Day, March 8th, 2018. And we're going to start off our discussion by welcoming Nina Lopez. She's originally from Argentina. She's based in London, England, and is one of the coordinators of the Global Women's Strike. Nina, welcome.
Hello, Margaret. Delighted to be with you.
Okay, so Nina, Spain just blew everybody away. Of course, they have the backing of organized labor in Spain, but the reports I'm hearing, something like 5.6 million took part in the international women's strike on March 8th. What can you tell us about what happened in Spain?
Well, I mean, Spain was the most astonishing event, and I have to say they had been planning it for a whole year. You know, they had a trial run last year for the 8th of March, and since then they organized very methodically. They had media outreach groups, they had action groups, they organized the students separately, they had an international outreach, and it was the most successful event that anybody could have hoped for. You're right. They said it was about 6 million women who took part, and the numbers for the different cities are staggering. In Madrid, they have 500,000 people on the street. In Barcelona, they had 600,000. In the south of Spain, in Sevilla, they had 100,000, and in the Basque Country, they had about 50,000 to 60,000 in the main cities. I mean, it's just absolutely astonishing. And as you know, the strike was to strike from employment, but it was also to strike from caring work. And the whole issue of caring work was very, very prominent on everybody's agenda.
Right. And with that in mind, Nina, perhaps you could just give us a quick little roundup of the history of this, because, you know, this whole idea of a women's strike didn't begin last year, right? Tell us a little bit of the background of the first call for the day off in Ireland, and then the global women's strike, and then leading up to International Women's Strike. Nina Lopez.
Yeah, well, in fact, it's interesting because on the platform in Barcelona, they gave a little history of the strike. And, you know, the first one was in Iceland in 1975. It was on the first day that opened the UN Decade for Women. The women of Iceland decided that they wanted to have a day off to show the importance of their work, both their wage and their unwaged work. And 90% of women actually took part. I mean, they had TV presenters, you know, male TV presenters with children sitting on their lap because the women were all out demonstrating. And it was an extraordinary event which got very little publicity at the time. But those of us who are now in the Global Women's Strike and who were in the Wages for Housework campaign paid attention, and we publicized it. And we then organized throughout the UN Decade for Women, we organized Time Off for Women on the anniversary of the Iceland Women's Strike. And it was in 1999 that Margareta Darcy, an anti-war Republican Irish woman, fantastic woman organizer, got in touch with Selma James of the Wages for Housework campaign and said, look, we are calling for a women's strike for the 8th of March to mark the millennium. Will you support us? And Selma James said, well, if you call for the strike, if the women's organization of Ireland calls the women out, we will call the women out internationally. As it turned out, the Irish women were not called out, although Margareta Darcy definitely went on strike. But we called an international strike, and that was the first global women's strike on the 8th of March of 2000. And then we kept the name from then on, you know, and we're now known, as you know, as the Global Women's Strike.
Thanks. Nina, I should just clarify that when you say a Republican woman in the United States, we're not talking about the GOP, Trump's party. Right. That's quite all right. Just to clear that up. Right.
I mean, she's okay. You don't know. I'm in the Republic of Ireland.
Right. Okay.
Sorry, yes.
Carry on, Nina.
Anyway, so, and it was, you know, it was, so in 2000, we had the first global women's strike where women in about 60 countries took part. But it was more of a celebration than a mobilization then. And that is what has changed. Because the strike this year in Spain was a mobilization. There is no question about it. I mean, the sectors that took part, everybody was involved. It was anti-imperialist. It was pro-immigrant. It was against transphobia. You know, sex workers were involved, domestic workers, women who do the double day. There were really fantastic interviews from professional women who said, I don't want to stop caring for my children, but I don't want to stop my job either. We need resources and we need support. And that's the kind of thing that people were putting forward, you know, as well as pay equity was very big on the agenda, and of course violence against women generally.
Yeah. And Nina, tell us about the involvement in terms of 2017, which was the first call for the international women's strike in its present form, the women in Argentina and the women in Poland, right? Two different parts of the world. Tell us the role that they played in this call.
Well, what happened in 2017 is that there had been a big movement in Argentina of the previous year, a big movement against femicide, because a number of women had been killed by men and the police had done nothing. And a number of the murders were, you know, was rape and murder and domestic violence. And women came out in their hundreds of thousands and were absolutely horrified and furious at the inaction by the authorities. And at the same time, that was the autumn of 2016, at the same time, women in Poland went on strike against the government, which wanted to criminalize abortion. And they called the strike, and within a couple of days, the government had backed down. So it was absolutely successful. And they got together and decided that for International Women's Day in 2017, they should call for a women's strike. And it was the power of those two movements that drew the other countries together. And of course, we were delighted. We who had called for a global women's strike in 2000, we were absolutely delighted to see this movement take off, and we were involved in a number of Skype calls. You know, there would be 30 different countries on the phone, people exchanging information about their events. It was really exciting, and they had decided then that instead of having a united platform, if you like, that every country should organize their own events and that they should decide what their main demands were. So it really worked very well. But in Spain, it was only a trial run. And this year, they had their real strike.
Right. Absolutely amazing there. And Nina, I'll have to say one of the things that distinguishes this international women's strike from, you know, we've had big mobilizations of the Women's March in the United States, but also in other places around the world that kicked off after, I think, the day after the inauguration of Donald Trump here in the United States. And this year, there was a lot more collaboration with the Women's March and the International Women's Strike in places like Los Angeles, for example. But one thing that distinguishes, it seems, the International Women's Strike and that march or that wing of the movement is that this platform of the International Women's Strike, fiercely anti-imperialist, also anti-capitalist, I mean, a real critique of capitalism, and also the value of caregiving work very much on the agenda. Just, I know you have to dash, Nina, so just some final thoughts from you on that. But then I also want to hear from you what happened in Peru, because I know you've been working with the women
there.
That's
right.
Nina.
That's right. Well, you know, the mayor of Barcelona said it all, you know, because she spoke. She's a fantastic woman called Ada Colau, and they took, the administration of Barcelona took the day off. And not only they took the day off and joined the demonstrations, but they also gave a day's wage towards the organizing of the women's strike.
Wow.
Which is just fantastic. And she spoke about caring work. And they you know, they said that caring work reproduces life and is absolutely crucial, and that they wanted to make this work visible as a contribution to society on the 8th of March, and that's what it was about. And they had a big banner. They say it's the, they called it the feminist strike in Spain, and they said, because we want to change everything. That was on their banner, to change everything, which was great. And of course, the fact that the trade union supported it, and various trade union did various things. You know, some supported a 2-hour strike, others supported a 24-hour strike. It varied, but generally there was trade union support, and that of course enabled the 6 million women to come out. And they're now pursuing, you know, their demands. This is not the end of it. This is just the beginning as far as they are concerned, which is fantastic. Now, just to move on to Peru, we have a global women's strike in Peru, which really launched itself on the 8th and the 10th of March, depending on the city. And it was a smaller affair because it's really more kind of a beginning, if you like, in Peru as opposed to what's happened in Spain. But they had a fantastic variety of sectors. They had indigenous women, they had trans and domestic workers, they had sex workers, they had women who worked at the university, they had trade unionists, and each sector brought their demands to the strike. And they had this wonderful slogan which said, "If our lives have no value, produce and reproduce without us," which I thought was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
And the women in the global women's strike had their banner, and what they were marching for and striking for was a living wage for caring work in your own home and other people's, because they're bringing together the mothers, those of us who do caring in our own homes, with the domestic workers who also do caring work in other people's homes. And it's really the first time that those two sectors have been given visibility on a banner with a unified demand in that way, which is really fantastic. And they were in a number of cities, not only in Lima, the capital, but also in the north, in Chiclayo, in Trujillo. And we have wonderful photographs that we will share with everyone.
Right. Well, Nina Lopez, on that note, really exciting, I'll have to say. Spain, of course, but your report on Peru is very much a breakthrough. In the United States, we are still involved in making that struggle that those of us who do unwage caregiving work are also workers, and really getting that point across to organized labor and other parts of the movement. So it's very exciting to see all of this happening. And just finally, Nina, do you feel right now that the whole March 8th, the whole mobilization has made a shift in the movement on women's rights?
Well, I think the question is whether the different countries are going to pursue it, but I think they will. And also there are other things that we're bringing to this strike. You know, I don't know if you are aware, but in Germany, the metal workers have gone on strike to demand a 28-hour week instead of the 35-hour week that they work at present for 2 years, so that they can take care of children and elderly parents. And their union had said, "We want our workers to have the chance to do work that is important for society," which is an astonishing statement coming from a union of metal workers. And they are winning, which means that people, there is now a possibility of getting paid for care work when you're a wage worker, that your waged employment recognizes that caring work is something that you should be entitled to do and to get paid for. So it's bringing a whole other dimension to the possibility of getting visibility and recognition for caring work without being penalized by a reduction in your wages. And we are bringing that into the strike. And I think that because the strike was so much about caring work and about pay equity, those were really the crucial issues. I think a whole set of possibilities have opened up as a result of this mass action and the variety that has come into it.
Yeah, and just finally also, in terms of the participation of men, quite a lot of men turned up at the strike event in Los Angeles. And I remembered some years back, there was a television ad that ran in Holland, a dinner table, and a child looks up at a man at the head of the dinner table and says, "Mommy, who is that stranger cutting the meat," right? And turns out it was the child's father, but the father had been so away working, right, that he was not available to that child. So given where they are in Germany now, it seems as though it opens up the possibility not only for women but also for men to be involved more in caring.
That's absolutely right. And in Spain, you know, the television channels were all these. First of all, a lot of men did turn up to the demonstrations, but also all the TV channels were discussing, and the men were discussing the validity of the demands and this, that, and the other. And they were, I mean, nobody could really be against it.
Yeah.
You know, it's too late for that now.
Right. Well, Nina Lopez, thank you so very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And it is, we are bringing you the first of our reports on events that took place around the world and in the United States on International Women's Day, March 8th, 2018. We just heard from Nina Lopez. And what we'll do now, we'd like to welcome Sarah Calloway. Sarah Calloway originally hailed from the United States, grew up as a military brat, a military family, now is based in London, England. And full disclosure, she's with Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike, which I also work with. But she also works with the African women's group that's based at the Crossroads Women's Center and involved also with the movement Momentum in the UK. And Momentum is a grassroots movement that grew up in support of Jeremy Corbyn, who is now the leader of the Labour Party in the UK. But they're not in the party, but definitely in support of Jeremy, and I suppose trying to hold him accountable. So, Sarah Calloway, welcome.
Thanks, Margaret. Really glad to be on.
Yeah, that's the All Africa Women's Group. That's the group I meant to mention. So, Sarah, what took place, as far as you know, in London? And if you know of any other places, let us know as well, as part of International Women's Day, but also the International Women's Strike in particular.
Right. Well, obviously, we were just inspired and bowled over by the actions in Spain. There were a number of very lively protests that took place on International Women's Day in London, and I'll give you a couple of the highlights. First of all, the Global Women's Strike held a protest outside of Parliament. They set up a mock trial, and they put the authorities and the family court on trial for separating mothers and children. There was a very good turnout. About 100 women and men came along to support. There were church organizations that came, anti-poverty groups, and even some newly formed mothers groups. And also there were a number of women from the Support Not Separation Network who've been doing a monthly protest outside the family court to call out the abuses that have gone on and the absolute tragedy of separating mothers and children for no reason at all. On that demonstration, some of the mothers and grandmothers wore masks. They told their stories. It was harrowing, some of the things that women described. At the same time, there was, you know, a touch of humor because there were two stand-up comics, a man and a woman, who they were dressed in the wig and gowns as they do in the British courts, and they quoted some of the outrageous comments by the judges have made in the court. And so, you know, as they read them out, the people on the protest would boo them and call them out, and we acted as a kind of jury and found them guilty. So it was really a lively event. Some of us left that rally and went on to an event in a central London park. This one was called together by what's called the Women's Strike Assembly. They had speakers from different groups. There were about 400 women there. There were many young women, students. There were right now the academics are on strike in the UK because their bosses are trying to dismantle their pensions to the degree that some people will only get half the money that they got. So a number of those women were there. There were many students. We spoke about the history of the Global Women's Strike. A sister from the All Africa Women's Group spoke about the Yarlswood Hunger Strike, and also she called out the NGOs.
What is the Yarlswood Hunger Strike?
Oh, at this moment, there's a detention center, an infamous detention center called Yarlswood, and it's a center where it has been mostly women detained there, some families, and the women there have been on strike for 2 weeks against abuses, indefinite detention, bad health care, being, you know, having their cases sabotaged, you know, and also sexual assaults by guards. They've been on hunger strike to protest that for 2 weeks now, and this has been going over a decade. There's been a whole series of hunger strikes. In this latest one, there's been a massive turnout of people to support them. When we left the Women's Strikeless Assembly event, we went straight on to a demonstration called to support the Yarlswood Hunger Strikers, and it was outside the Home Office, which is the place that implements the immigration laws. There were about 300 women and men there. On the phone, they had women from inside the detention center speaking out, saying their demands. They were singing and chanting. A lot of the people there were young people. That was called together by a student group, the SOAS Detention Support Group, and we spoke in support of the women in Yarlswood. A number of women from the All Africa Women's Group spoke. They talked about the fact that, you know, governments and corporations have been stealing from Africa for decades and centuries, and so when we come here, we have the right to be here to claim and for safety. You know, we're here because they're still there stealing. So that was really cheered. Women spoke on the phone. There were drumming, and it was a really uplifting event. From that event, we went straight on to a protest in support of the Rohingya women. As you probably know, the Rohingya people are suffering what amounts to genocide. Something like 600,000 people have been driven from what used to be Burma into Bangladesh, where they're living in camps. There's been an absolute gang rape has been systematic in order to undermine and destroy communities. We targeted Unilever, which is a multinational company which has been investing in Myanmar, which used to be called Burma, millions of pounds, and they claim to have a good track record with women. They promote their Dove products, you know, on the grounds that they are looking after women's safety. So we went there to call them out. We were able to hand in a letter. There was a fantastic, about 150 people came, lots of chanting and singing. And we just heard this morning that Unilever is moving their headquarters from London to Amsterdam, so we think maybe that demonstration had quite a good impact. The last event that we went to was called by sex workers organizations, and we walked through the main red light area in London, which is called Soho, and the call of the call was strike for decriminalization, and that was really a breakthrough because it's been a long time, you know, in organizing to recognize that the laws against sex workers have to go in order so that women can speak out and also not be criminalized. A march of about, I think that was about 500 people, went to some of the famous sites in Soho, which is right in the center of London. They did a one-minute noise to remember a sex worker organizer who tragically died a couple of months ago. There was a call for sex workers' rights to scrap the laws, and also a big call out in support of trans women. And this is a breakthrough because there's been a kind of a witch hunt going on. It's from some parts of the feminist movement, which has been quite outrageous. So it was great to see different sectors getting together. And that march ended by going to join strikers they're cinema workers who've been on strike for a while, mainly women, and that was the march concluded there. So we thought it was really good that the issues are being put together in a way they aren't usually.
Yeah.
So it was quite an exciting day, and our feet were very sore by the end of it.
Well, you all did so much. I mean, I'm just amazed listening to you, the kind of solidarity and integration, really, of so many demands and movements. Well, Sarah Calloway, we appreciate your report. I'm afraid we are out of time, but thank you so very much for joining us and for that exciting report of a really, really busy day of our sisters in London, England, as part of the International Women's Strike that took place on March 8th. Thank you, Sarah.
Okay, thank you for having us.
Okay, we're going to take a short station break. And when we return, Zamena joins us from New York City. And we also will be hearing some of the sound of what took place at the United Nations on International Women's Day. We'll be right back.
What you want?
Welcome back to Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. And the song, by the way, that you heard during the break, we're playing this for our International Women's Day coverage, is Aretha Franklin's Respect. And you can check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. And we want to give, we're also on SoundCloud. So you can just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Spain, which had the largest participation in the International Women's Strike on March 8th. We are now going to turn our attention to what took place in New York City. And I'd like to welcome Zamena Bustamante. She is one of the national organizers. She's on the national coordinating group of the International Women's Strike. And she's also active with the International Women's Strike in New York City. Zamena, welcome.
Hi, Margaret.
Yes. So, Zamena, first of all, tell us, did the march in New York City have a particular focus and or theme? And also tell us how it went.
Well, I mean, it went very well. We were like fighting against the weather because it was like 10 degrees colder than last year. But even in those conditions, people came out and the mood was like really great. We had around like 1,000 people, more or less, or a little bit more in Washington Square Park. And I mean, there was no, like a specific theme. What we did is that we highlighted the different struggles of our coalition members, and you know, like they were representing very diverse struggles, but we were trying to sort of like articulate them both as working class and feminist struggles. So this, you know, like is going from the battle around universal healthcare in New York State to the battle for free and abortion upon demand. Many workers that are fighting, low wage workers that are fighting for unionizing were there. The street vendors were there. Organized sex workers. We just had like a whole array of like feminist and working class struggles represented. And generally speaking, I guess that we could say that, you know, like women's labor in all its forms was like the central issue.
Right. And as in Spain, their focus seemed to be pay equity and also caregiving work. And that also seemed to be true in Argentina. We just heard a report about what happened in Spain, what happened in Peru, and also what took place in London, England, where there were a number of activities that happened. So, Jimena, we know that you all clearly were impacted by the weather. So many people are like, there's a nor'easter coming. Right. And you
right.
all have had such a, you know, such a time with that. But Jimena, I know that in New York, you all had also been working to try to do some outreach to organize labor. What kind of response did you get?
Well, I mean, it's very mixed. I guess that a very important thing for us in IWS New York City that just like follows the whole political kind of like a trend that the International Women's Strike has been pushing across the globe is, as we were saying, expanding the idea of labor, right? I mean, to understand labor as both paid and unpaid, but also expanding the idea of organized labor. So, particularly in the United States, we were reaching out to two kinds of organizations, let's say, I mean, in terms of organized labor. On the one hand, rank and file groups within unions, and on the other, low wage workers organizations. So, I mean, this is very important for us to highlight because low-wage workers organizations are usually not always portrayed as part of the labor movement, since, you know, like there are like legal restrictions to the unionization of many of these workers. So, for instance, you know, like in domestic work, care work, the food service industry, there are like many barriers to unionization, but there have been like different forms of organizations emerging to tackle that. Like worker centers and cooperatives. So we reach out both to those kind of like low-wage worker organizations and to rank and file groups. And the result was, I mean, with the low-wage workers organizations was like really good. We have been working with them for the last year. They are in like very sort of in a very tough position because they are like sort of like fighting for the rights of the workers that are like the most exploited and oppressed. And but I mean, like we, for instance, had the Worker Center Federation endorsing the day of action. They show up. We had DROM, which is a low-wage workers organization focusing on South Asian community. The Laundry Workers Center was there. The Street Vendors Project. All these are like low-wage working workers organizations that were like very supportive and like brought people and companions to the rally. And regarding unions, that's like of course a more difficult sort of equation. But we were able to get in touch with MOR, that is like the radical educators caucus within the FIT. They came and they also spoke at the rally. NYSNA, which is the nurses union, also came and also spoke at the rally. We had the endorsement and presence of many UAW locals. So yeah, more or less that's like the yeah. landscape. But of course, there's still much to be done regarding unions in particular.
Right. And Jimena, given the support that organized labor gave to the strike in Spain, which was massive, something like 6 million women participating, and their focus on pay equity and on caring work. And also, we just heard from an earlier guest that in Germany, there's a proposal for a 28-hour work week instead of 35, so that people will have more time to take care of children and elderly parents. So it's a way of recognizing in wage employment, right, the kind of double day that sadly we do as women. Do you think that the situation in Spain, but also the situation in Germany, will embolden women in the United States to push the organized labor a bit more to support these kinds of efforts? Jimena?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I would like to highlight Spain, but also Argentina. You know, the thing is that Argentina has been big from the very beginning, so right now people are like putting more attention to Spain, and I mean rightly so, but I guess that I just want to point out to those two examples. I believe that yeah, that they are very very inspiring, but that also we should pay attention to the organizing details, you know, behind all these. For instance, you know, like in Spain, the whole discussion on a women's strike is something that has been developing for the last 5 years, particularly in Catalonia. You know, like this was a movement that preceded the women's strike in Poland, preceded the women's strike in Argentina, and it was led by the autonomous feminist movement. So I believe that we should like sort of like stress that, you know, like because there's a whole organizing infrastructure that was put in place that made possible then later on, you know, like once the yeah. movement became global, it made possible to engage the unions in Spain, right? But this is something that was coming from the autonomous feminist movement and that they had been working for a long time. So I guess that both the results that we saw are like something emboldening, but also, I mean, for us it's very important to look at the backstage, right? and all the political process that has been going on there and that has been led by sort of a grassroots feminist groups.
Yeah, yeah, right. And Hemeta, we just have about a minute or so before we have to wrap up. What other cities in the United States were there international women's strike events on March 8th?
Well, there were several. Well, you know, L.A., New York, then Oakland, in Stamford, Connecticut. I mean, it's a small city, but it's very significant because the Hilton workers are fighting for unionizing, and it's one of, like, the most thriving sort of labor struggles that are happening right now. And, you know, it's led by the housekeepers at the Hilton. Mm-hmm. So Stamford, Connecticut, too, Geneva, New York, Portland, Pittsburgh. Yeah. I don't know if I am missing any
yeah.
other.
So a number of cities then around across the United States, right? And Hermana,
right.
We now see our children, right, out on the streets, walking out of schools by the tens of thousands yesterday. So something really seems to be in the air. So this is all to be continued. Hermana Bustamante, thank you so very much for your work and for taking the time to join us today. Thank you.
Thanks to you.
And now wrapping up our show today on events that took place on International Women's Day, March 8th, 2018, we'll hear from two voices who were invited to a discussion at the United Nations in New York City. And they are two actresses featuring actress Reese Witherspoon and also Denai Guerrera. Now, Denai Guerrera, she hails from Zimbabwe. She burst onto the international screen with her incredible performance in the blockbuster film Black Panther. First, we're going to hear from Reese Witherspoon.
I have a company in Los Angeles that I started 7 years ago to put women at the center of stories because I noticed not as many women were getting to be the leads in movies. And then this year, we discovered through incredible reporting through the New York Times and several other journalistic establishments that there has been rampant sexual harassment and abuse within our industry. Including myself. When I was 16 years old, I was assaulted by a director on a movie. And I think one of the things I understood was a condition of my employment and the opportunities that I had was silence. And with the revelation that so many women had been assaulted, discriminated against, and generally told to be quiet for fear of losing opportunity and their job, we decided we were all going to come together. So it started out in October, 40 women in a room just talking about this is a problem and how are we going to deal with it? Because enough is enough and time is up. Mm. We are no longer going to be harassed. We are no longer going to be mistreated or discriminated against or paid less money. We are going to create more opportunities for each other. But as an extension of that, we decided we wanted to reach out to other communities, and we didn't know how to do that. And that is when we got the beautiful letter from Monica Ramirez that was on behalf of the farm workers who said, "We see you, we hear you. We know you're in Hollywood and your lives are different, but we are all the same because we are women and we are workers. And women everywhere who are workers have to link arms and stand together." And that was a huge catalyst for us. So we wrote a letter in response back to Monica, and that's how the Time's Up movement started. To speak a little bit more about what Time's Up is, as we formed the organization and it became hundreds and hundreds of women across the country, this country, it was important for us to not just sort of talk about or admire problems of gender inequity and pay disparity. We decided that first and foremost, we needed to help our sisters who were being harassed in the workplace. So we established the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund with the National Women's Law Center. And in 10 days, we raised $20 million. It was incredible. to help, at this point, we've helped 1,500 women with on-the-job harassment suits against their employers. Some of these are class action suits. It's been incredible, the need, but it just shows you how many more people are going to need this service and these services. We've also partnered with some global organizations, and at the BAFTAs this year, which is the British Academy Awards, money was raised for the UK Justice and Equality Fund under the Time's Up label. So I think we're talking about globally, how can we affect change by creating safer work environments and having the companies we work for and the governments that represent us understand that we are not going away and we're not going to be quiet. We want to see ourselves represented 50-50 as soon as possible, as soon as we can make that possible, because women are 50% of the population. We deserve 50% of the representation, 50% of the salaries. We will no longer continue to do work without being paid properly for it. And that's a big part of what this organization is doing.
And that was Reese Witherspoon speaking at the United Nations on International Women's Day. And now we are going to hear from Danai Gurira.
You know, we're in nations with very young nations, and the idea of kept stepping out of the brutality and the assault and the legacy of colonization and stepping into our own identity, self-determined and very clearly paved by ourselves, has been plagued often by very, very troublesome leadership. And so we've seen a lot of coup d'etats. We've seen a lot of unstable governances, which obviously always result in oppression and assault and attacks on the protections of women and girls. So we've seen that over and over and over again. And the thing that we've seen in a very clear form break the back of that has been when women take the helm. And we saw that in Liberia very clearly. And of course, Liberia, that story is very close to my heart, because as was mentioned, my play Eclipsed, I went there, I sat in the presence of these women whom I'd never heard about till I got there. Yeah. And that's another massive problem, is what stories do we amplify? I'd never heard of the Liberian peace women till I got there. I was here in the United States researching Liberia for years. I knew everything about Charles Taylor. But what did I know about Sugars Cooper? What did I know about Lema Gboi? What did I know about the women on the ground working, stepping in front of loaded guns and saying, stop it. Take care of our nation. Think about our children and our children's children. So, to be honest with you, that's where I drew strength from as I formed Okoye. I drew strength from those women. I drew strength from the women in my history, even of Zimbabwe, Mbuye Nahanda, who stood up to the women, to the assault that was happening to her nation back in the 1890s. But there are women who have stood up, but they don't get amplified. So if there's one thing I would love for Okoye to remind us of, it's that those women already exist. Are we giving them voice? Are we giving them platform? Are we amplifying them? And are we encouraging other women and girls to know that they can step into those positions and they will be supported as they do so? The times I've done research around women and girls issues, because everything I write is about trying to give voice to those who have been denied a platform to be heard and be seen in their full humanity, I'm amazed by how, though people talk about invisibility and things like that, when I've sat in the presence, for instance, in Liberia, when I sat in the presence of women and girls who had gone through things that I couldn't even begin to imagine, and they sat down with me and wanted to share their stories, they would tell me, firstly, there was never one who wasn't willing to be heard. They all wanted to be heard. And secondly, they all almost entirely, all of them, in fact, said to me, no one had ever asked. No one had ever asked them what had happened to them. No one had ever asked what they'd gone through or what they wanted next. And that that really got me. And at the time, I was an extremely broke playwright who was there because I'd done a rent party. And a friend said he'd match whatever I made, and that helped me pay my New York rent and get on that plane. But now I'm in a different position. So. So I have to go back, and I have to meet those girls again face to face. So I convict myself on that, and to answer your question, as much as I can answer it right now, it's about that circle closing very much, because those girls have the potential and the power and the desire and the resilience. What the women and girls have made it through thus far in the world shows us very clearly women are the more powerful sex, okay? Because I cannot believe the things I've heard women say they've been through, and they still keep going day by day and handle their business and take care of the children and invest in their communities and stand up and make things better for people around them. So what we need to do more and more, to myself and others, I say, how do we close that circle? How do we make sure we are empowering each other? How we make sure we go and look at that girl in the eye? She could be, you know, the next woman who makes a difference. She could be the next Oprah. She could be the next Michelle. She could be, who could she be? But if we don't get up and do something practical, very practical in our various positions of power, and we all possess them in various ways, she might not reach her greatness and her potential. So that's something I'm speaking to myself. Please trust. It's about how we make sure those girls and women are not there, that their potential is not left on the floor. And it's about how each one of us can do that very specifically. I know it feels overwhelming. It does. But there are ways that we can take a bite out of it, each one of us, and figure out, how do I empower that one girl, or those three girls, or those five girls? How do I connect with the leaders who are already on the ground, which is another major thing. It's like how there are so many courageous, stunningly courageous women on the ground right now doing amazing work. I've met an amazing woman from the Congo doing stunning work around what's happening to women constantly in that country, in that nation. Constantly they are going through unspeakable things, and she speaks out, and her life is threatened constantly. But she does things that allow, every day she opens her door and there are 15 women there who need her, and who she stands up for and makes sure life gets better, who she fights for in the justice system of the Congo so that these men are held accountable. Who can we connect to? I try to remain very connected to her. I keep a picture of her on my mirror in my bedroom in Los Angeles, so that every day I wake up, I see her face. Who can we connect to in a way that is that person-to-person thing, that allows each one of us, and I have to say this more to my own colleagues on the ground in Los Angeles and in New York and wherever we are, where we have power as people in Hollywood, where we're given these huge platforms and we're compensated well. How do we use that to make sure that those girls and those women and those leaders, like those are, that's where the answer is. It's in the bosom of those women in the Congo, in Syria, in Liberia. It's in their bosom. That's where all of our answers are, quite honestly.
What do you want women to do tomorrow, the day after International Women's Day? What can they do to help lead this fight?
I think just make a pledge that you're not going to stop until things have changed in this world. And we're not going to stop, and we're not going to be quiet, and we're going to stand up for the woman next to us, because everybody can do something. Do what you can with what you have, where you are. Help the woman next to you.
And to the men out there.
We need them.
Yes. We do. And they need this too. This disbalance is not healthy for either side of the gender. You know, it's a disbalance that it leaves us all sick. It leaves us all unhealthy. It leaves us all unwhole. And so I do encourage the men, and there's so many who are already coming forward, and I love that. We're thankful for that. As I was growing up, I always wondered, you know, because I was a loudmouth kid that always wanted to ask these questions, but I always wondered, why I didn't see many men stand up about towards these issues and speak out about how they could tell a man was being unjust towards other women, or they could tell an issue didn't make sense about how a woman, women were being treated as compared to them. And I'm thankful now that I'm seeing that change happen. I'm seeing men start to stand up. But we need so many more of you to stand up, to speak to one another. Men often listen to each other a lot more sometimes than they listen to women. We need those who get it to speak and to change the minds of each other and to tolerate zero. Not in the locker room, not in the bar. Don't tolerate any of it. Stand up every minute, because you could be saving a woman from a really unjust situation.
We are out of time. I'd like to thank all of today's guests. Today's show produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the entire Sojourner Truth team, Sherelle Withers, our intern, assistant producer, Stephanie Case, and our engineer, Mr. T, Teddy Robinson, and all who helped to make this show possible. We want to give special shout out and thanks to the Global Women's Strike for helping with today's show. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Rising Up with Sonali Kolhatkar. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air with special programming on Tuesday. I hope you get to do so.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon World Water Day, celebrated on Thursday, March 22nd. Environment Oregon and Oregon Environmental Council are organizing a statewide celebration of World Water Day on March 22nd to celebrate the importance of clean and abundant water and to bring people together around a common commitment to a future with cleaner and more abundant water. All events are listed at OregonWorldWaterDay.org. Again, that's Oregon World Water Day, celebrated on Thursday, March 22nd, in locations all over the state. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 10 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock. Time for Air Cascadia coming up next. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, The Food Show welcomes the organizers of Oyster Day, plus the author of Mastering Stocks and Broths. This is KBOO, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned.